Hello and welcome to this very special occasion. I am so pleased that you're able to join me on the book launch, the official launch for my brand new book, the first full-length book I've written in 15 years called Money Magnet, How to Attract and Keep a Fortune That Counts. So glad that you're sharing this event with me today. I do need to start with a little disclaimer to keep all my legal people happy. This webinar is provided for general information and educational purposes only. It is not investment, accounting, legal, tax, or other advice. Simple. What shall we be talking about on this book launch? I've tried to give you a mix of interesting information about how the book came to be and a bit of a commentary about what I see happening in financial markets at the moment, and more importantly, what you can do to protect yourself and prepare to possibly even take advantage of some stormy economic conditions ahead. We're going to be talking about Money Magnet. We're going to be talking about those challenges that face us today. I've got six game-changing ideas for you to work through. I'm going to talk to you about this brand new Money Magnet movement that I'm launching today and your opportunity to partner with me as an ambassador for the cause. And together, what we're going to try and do is awaken the financial spirit that is dormant out there in the community or forgotten. And in doing so, the vision is to create generational change where people, instead of being financially disempowered, will be financially empowered. We'll do a period of Q&A and then I'll finish up with a prayer and the book will be launched. No champagne to crack across the book today, I'm afraid. Well, some of you have jumped on, no doubt, to try and figure out how on earth do I win a free year's supply of books. I'll tell you about that right at the end. You're going to have to wait for it. I'm sorry. But it's pretty exciting, and thanks to the team at Wiley for helping out there. Rightio, part one about Money Magnet. Do you know that the book started with a dream? It's the only dream I've ever had in my life where I woke up sobbing, sort of stunned, unable to say anything, unable to do anything. It was such a profound dream. And the dream happened, I'm a bit scared to say, around 15 years ago. And with that 15 years that have passed, it's kind of been something that I never got around to doing. And I start the book by sharing what happened in this dream and what I wrote in my journal about it, and how I felt God saying to me, Steve, I want you to write a book about financial empowerment to help people with their finances, which was a bit weird for me at the time because I was so involved with teaching people about real estate investing. And yes, it did take a number of years, 15 years, in fact, before the time felt right to write this book. And the genesis of the book after the dream was a chat up at my property that I own at Bindi, where we're planting trees to create a native forest, with Blair, who I called Youngin, who was the son of a guy who I'd met and had been doing some hunting on the property to get the deer numbers down. And in chatting with Blair, we got talking about money. And I said to him, I said, Youngin, who's taught you, who's shown you how to be good with money? And he said, no one, no one has taught me, no one has shown me. My parents have just done the best job that they could do, but they don't really know. They've had money problems in their own situation. So I'm kind of, I don't know. And it got me thinking, you know what? They don't teach it at school. Our parents do the best job they can to pass on what they know. But really, we're just making it up and hoping that everything's going to be all right. We're sort of walking around, stumbling around in the dark and just hoping that we don't trip over. And what about if you had someone in your family who knew what they were doing when it came to money? They had demonstrated success over a long period of time. Would you want to learn from them? Would you want to go up to them and say, hey, Uncle so-and-so, or hey, Auntie so-and-so, can you teach me how to be better with money? Can you share with me the things that have worked for you, maybe some of the mistakes you've made, so I can learn and I don't have to make those mistakes? Because money is such a taboo topic that we hardly ever talk about it, because I think there's a certain element of shame amongst parents that they're not doing better or that they didn't do better. And so these sins of past generations, these bad habits, just keep replicating over and over again. Now, after the chat with Youngin, 2019 or thereabouts, I started writing the book. And I was inspired. I was like, yes, we're going to get this book written. And then, boom, COVID happened. Lockdowns. And anyone who lived through the lockdowns that we went through, just you'll know what I mean about sucking the air out of your motivation and just you kind of lost your will to do a whole lot of things. It just became about sitting around and just getting through it. It was a survival time. And the book stalled and it kind of almost fell away. And then something unusual happened again. I went to have a mole frozen off my neck. And Wes, the GP who was going to do it, said, look, I'm not quite set up to do this today. I'll just refer you to your local dermatologist. And the local dermatologist froze off the mole. It's right on the bottom of where I was shaving. And then he said, well, you know, what's your family history with skin cancer? And I said, well, it's funny you should say that. You know, mum and dad have both had melanomas, but they were silly. They used to cook themselves at the beach and put on reef oil and just sit out in the sun all day long. And no doubt when they were kids, there was none of this sun smart message. And he said, well, that's all true, but we better take a look at you. And then he said, what's that spot on your face? And I said, I don't know. I've got, you know, freckly skin. Is it a freckle? What is it? And he said, oh, we just better be safe. What we need to do is we better take a biopsy of it. And lo and behold, it actually came back as a double skin cancer. It came back as a baby melanoma, and it came back as a BCC collision, two in one. And he's pretty funny. He goes, oh, look, you're really lucky. It's really rare that you've got this. I'm thinking, it's really unlucky. What are you talking about? But anyway, this giant wake-up call in the skin cancer and having it hacked out, that was the only way to get rid of it, was a wake-up call for me that I needed to get on and write this book. Don't take for granted that you've got more time tomorrow when something might happen and you may not have that time. And so I set a deadline. And I set a deadline of having the book finished by the 30th of June this year. That's how the book sort of came to be. It's my own experiences around money, growing up with parents that neither of them had a lot, but they did the best that they knew how to do. And then realizing that the skills that they gave me weren't enough to get me to my goal of retiring early, I needed different strategies and different information to bridge the gap from where they could get me to and where I wanted to get to. And that's the purpose of Money Magnet. Money Magnet's designed to be that bridge between where you are now and where you want to get to financially, but you just don't know how to get there because your current habits and thoughts, strategies aren't enough to get you across the bridge. What about the dates of the book? Just in case you're interested, how long does it take to write a book, you might be wondering. Well, here are the key dates, and I'm making this as much as a point for me as I am anyone else. First of all, in August 2019, I sent an email to the publishers. Hey, is there any interest in maybe doing a revision to 0 to 130? Or even better, what about the idea of a new book teaching people about how to be financially empowered? That then followed up with an in-person meeting with the Wiley team in December 2019. Amazing that it's nearly 3 years ago. Then I started writing it after the conversation with Youngin in September 2020. And then, of course, COVID happened and more lockdowns and snakes and ladders. And then I started rewriting the book almost again from scratch on the 29th of March 2022. How do I know that date? I know that date because every day that I wrote, I saved a new manuscript with that date. And the first date that I saved a manuscript was the 29th of March, 2022. And then I managed to complete the book, I think it's about 65,000 words, on the 2nd of July, 2022, and then went into post-production. That's when the team at Wiley really kicked in and worked their magic, and that's Lucy and, of course, Chris, and then Sandra, who helped with the editing, and all the people who work behind the scenes there that I haven't even met. It was a phenomenal effort. I mean, I know everyone thinks their baby's pretty, but I actually think the finished product of the book, from the cover through to the typesetting, through the editing, the whole thing has come together really, really well. Really proud of the team and the work that they did to bring it together. Of course, the book also wouldn't exist if not for my book writing team in terms of the people who I would write a chapter and then I would run it past them and I'll thank them a little bit later. The book's not ghostwritten. It is written by me, these fingers, this keyboard, all sat here just tap, 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 tap away. There's a fair bit that didn't make it into the book for the sake of word limits. And all going well, I'll just release that information as bonus material as time goes on. Are you finding this interesting, folks? We'll move on to some more information for you guys, but just a little bit of a quick summary, 10 minutes or so of how the book came to be. Excuse me while I take a drink from time to time to keep my voice going. Sometimes people say to me, how do you write a book? And the answer is one character at a time. And because of that, sometimes people make it a bit harder than it needs to be. You've got to work out what conversation you want to have, who do you want to have the conversation with, and then how are you going to make the conversation interesting, and then what do you want people to do with the conversation? I guess I'm lucky because I'm an established author. It's not hard. Well, there's publishers out there, if you like, who are willing to have a conversation with me about the book. If you're sort of out of the gate, hey, I've got an idea for a book, what do you think? It can be a bit hard to get that breakthrough. But luckily, I've got that reputation with Wiley and that allowed a door to be opened. All right, so what are my hopes for the book? Following on from what I just said, why write another book? You know, does the world really need another book about money? It's a good question. My broad goals are to try and start a conversation about money because, as I mentioned before, money is a taboo topic in many households. It was indeed in the household that I grew up in. We saw what went on, but it was never talked to us about what went on. We just watched and then we made all these assumptions, and often the assumptions you make are not right. It's just your understanding as a child that becomes your fact as an adult. The book, therefore, is a talking piece to try and make it easier to talk about money. It raises concepts and it has these Steve-isms, these thoughts, these conversation starters to get you thinking about how is it that I think this way about money and why do I act this way about money and are these thoughts and are these acts going to result in a good outcome? And if not, what do I do about it? And who's watching me and what am I teaching them? And when I'm gone, how am I going to be remembered for the way that I interacted and used money? These are pretty big topics. Not only do I want to start the conversation, but I thought it very, very important that I provide practical, useful, profitable ideas and strategies that anyone and you can use to not only attract more money, but to keep more of the money that you attract. Yes, and part of that is going to be a conversation around how do I earn more, but how do I keep more, and then how do I use what I've kept to multiply it so that I can benefit and have money work for me rather than having me work for money. And that transition from working for money working for you, is the summit of the quest to become financially free. And the day that money starts working for you and you stop working for money will be the day that you can start thinking, right, how do I want to touch, move, and inspire other people on a game-changing scale? The idea of the book, and we'll talk about this later on when we talk about this spirit of financial empowerment, is to break the generational glass ceilings that will be holding you back from achieving your full wealth potential and holding back your children, grandchildren, and generations to come. Wouldn't you want to do that if you could? Wouldn't you want to say, hey, I never even knew there was a glass ceiling on my financial potential, but what if I could break it? What if I could get through it to get to that higher branch, to achieve things that used to be impossible? I just didn't know how I'd do it. Well, it is possible if you've got the right strategies and tools, techniques to get you there. Really, though, I didn't write the book to help you buy another yacht or to upgrade to another Ferrari. My real hope in the book is that as you move beyond what we call survival into significance, you'll be able to think about this concept of legacy and how I can give a context to my money to add meaning to my life. Yes, there's business class airfares and whatever you want to spend your money on, that's up to you. But what about the lessons that we can learn, for instance, from Alfred Nobel about how we can create this legacy for the improvement of humanity? Now, some people aren't going to care about that, but I think this notion that as a Christian, storing your treasure in heaven rather than on earth is a real wake-up call for those people who have ears to listen. So what are we going to do? We've got this awareness. We're going to make it okay to start talking about money. These strategies that I mentioned before, a lot of people don't know them. A lot of them aren't talked about anywhere. You can't read them in another book. These are strategies that I've tried and tested and got working, little formulas, logical calculations that set things out. And then to awaken that spirit of financial empowerment and make that impossible possible for you. Do I get an amen out there for anyone? This sounds good. This sounds like something that I wish I had have stumbled across 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago in some cases. All right, cool. You've got the spirit of why I went to the effort in writing the book. Did I write the book to make money? Did I write the book to make another million, another 2 million or something like that? Absolutely not. That was not my motivation in any part in writing the book. 100% of the royalties from the book will be redeployed back to this tree change project, a picture of which I took the other week up there at Bindi in northeast Victoria, where we're going to transform cleared land, which is weed and rock infested, into permanent native forests for generations to come to enjoy. So by purchasing the book, by reading the book, not only will it help you, it will indirectly help me to achieve a legacy project that I am putting my other money towards as well. And then together we can partner on making something amazing happen. I love these win-win outcomes. You'll win by reading the book, your family will win by you applying the book, your community will win by you talking about the book, and then the couple of bucks I make in a royalty for every book sold will then be redeployed into this project. Amazing. Part two, the challenges facing us today. Let's change gears now and let's start moving away from the book and talking about what's going on out there at the time that the book is released. The two issues we're dealing with, and we'll talk about them one after the other, first of all is inflation, and second of all are rising interest rates. Well, what is inflation? Simply put, inflation is rising prices, inflate, rising. And why is inflation a problem? Inflation is a problem because it means that your money buys less, and therefore you need more money to buy the same things, and the value of your wealth goes down because it doesn't buy as much. Does that make sense? Not only does it cause you to need more money to buy the same things, but the amount of money that you've got will buy less, and so it's like a double-edged sword. So what has caused inflation? Now, we can have an argument about economics here, but given that I'm the one running the webinar, you get to hear what I think. I think what caused inflation is the stimulus associated with us trying to save ourselves from a COVID recession. And because we didn't know how much to stimulate, they threw the kitchen sink at the problem. And only today, in today's media, has it come out that it's been found that the stimulus program around the home builder, giving people grants to do renovations, has caused the price of building materials to go up. Who would have thought, right? And that far more people took advantage of the program than the government initially believed, and that it's cost billions of dollars when they thought it might have been hundreds of millions of dollars. Whoops. And of course, that money is borrowed, and so the government now has to repay it from future taxes. Anyway, the bottom line is there's all this money out there in the economy, and although some of the stimulus programs have ended, there's still a lot of money out there from stimulus programs that are still sort of coming to the end of their life. That's why this inflation problem that we've got at the moment isn't likely to end anytime soon. Now, not only was there a demand side cause to rising inflation, which is people have money and they spend it, the supply side is there weren't enough goods. And because of COVID and shipping problems and raw material problems, because of changes in the way that we generate electricity, government policy, that's caused the cost of the supply inputs to go up, whether it's the energy to make something, the shipping to bring it over, a shortage or an increase has caused prices to go up too. So not only do you have a demand side increase, you've got a supply side increase, and the two of them together have conspired to create this humongous inflation problem. Whereas inflation is thought to be normal at 2 to 3%, we're running at 7 to 8% at the moment. Why is that a problem? Well, let's just round it out to 10% for easy maths. After 2 years of 10% inflation, everything's 20% more expensive and you've lost one fifth of the value of your wealth. Not good. How do you fix inflation? Well, you do the opposite of what caused inflation. You don't fix inflation by doing more of what you did to make inflation worse. You actually fix the inflation by doing the opposite. So what is the opposite of stimulating? Taxing. What is the opposite of giving people money? Taking money away. What is the opposite of doing economic programs to create jobs? Economic programs to take jobs away. You have to unwind what you did that caused the problem to begin with. If you're printing money, you stop printing money and you take money out of money supply. The issue we have with doing that is that that's the right thing to do economically. It's almost impossible to do politically, because doing the right thing politically is going to get you voted out of government. Not good, particularly with a new government that wants to keep people happy. Instead, what they want to do is say, let's give people wage increases. We're the party that gives people wage increases. We're going to subsidize your power bills. We're going to give you wage increases. We're going to start new incentive programs. We're going to start spending money on infrastructure projects. Now, how do you think this is going to end up? Instead of doing what we need to reverse what we did, we continue, albeit at a lesser pace, maybe, stimulating the economy. We have people saying, I can't make ends meet. Well, let's give them money. How's that going to work out? Instead of teaching people how to be better money managers, let's just give them more money. We need to fix the problem to teach people how to be better at making, managing, and multiplying their money rather than just giving them money when they're in a crisis, I think. Anyone give me a hallelujah or an amen there? Let's move on to interest rates then. What is interest rates? Why are interest rates going up? Interest rates are going up because the Reserve Bank, which for a couple of decades now has been independent to government, is trying to get inflation down. They have a mandate for inflation to be within their so-called target range, 2 to 3%. And they can't write economic policy. They can't be the government handing out money. They have effectively one tool. They only have a pen. That's all they've got. They don't have a pencil. They don't have an eraser. They don't have a ruler. All they've got's a pen. And all they can do with their pen is write with it. And the only thing they can write is interest rates going up or interest rates going down. So when interest rates go up and people who have borrowed money have to pay more in interest, that means they have less money to spend on other things. If they've got less money to spend on other things, it's taking money out of the economy. That's why they're raising interest rates. They're trying to put their foot on the brake, but at the same time, the government's putting their foot on the accelerator. Wages increases, etc. So we're driving the car with a foot on the accelerator and a foot on the brake. It's just that one's the government, one's the RBA. What has caused interest rates going up? Just like the government, the RBA made a mistake. They dropped interest rates to a level so low, which is they thought they had to do for people to survive COVID, and they kept them down there too long in hindsight. that it caused all these people to go and borrow all this money. And people don't just borrow money and put it in the bank. What do? They borrow the money and they, anyone, while I have a sip of water, what do they do with the money? Okay, good. Buy stuff. They spend it. And as they spend the money, do you think that stimulates the economy or do you think it stifles the economy? Of course, the act of spending money stimulates the economy. The government giving people money and the RBA dropping interest rates so people have more money to spend had the twofold impact of causing inflation. Who knew it was right? The economics books that you read in high school and at university where it says if you print money, it leads to inflation were right. For a couple of years there, people were saying there's a new rule, apparently insert reason why the old rules don't apply anymore. And it turns out they weren't right. The old rules do apply. Now, what do the old rules say will happen? The old rules say what will happen is, in the words of Paul Keating, a recession that you have to have. You have to take the money out of the economy to the point of stalling the economy. And a stalling economy is called a recession. Of course, the trick is not to stall it to the point that it dies and you enter into a severe recession or a depression. But you never know what to do until after it's done. You have to preempt it and you have to be willing to be wrong, which is what the RBA was before. Overcorrect, oversteer, and then keep correcting as you go. So it's likely, therefore, that the RBA will increase interest rates too far and too high. And then by the time that the economy started stalling and they try and drop interest rates to get it going again, the confidence in the market will be lower and the ability to restart that engine and get the economy going again will take some time. And that length of time will be the length of any recession or possible recession. So what might happen? We've talked about what interest rates are and what inflation is. We've talked about how you fix it, but how you fix it and how the government fixes it might be two different things. I've got three things that could happen. I've rubbed the crystal ball. Here's the future. There's only three things that can happen. And when you identify those three things and make plans for those three things, you make a step in the right direction. The first thing that can happen is what I call provocation. And provocation is the government doesn't care. They just keep making policy and that policy makes things worse. What policy do you think the government could do that would make things worse? Over to you. What do you think? Anyone? Everyone's gone quiet. All right, spend more, give more money away, print more money. Go through with these tax cuts, which mean more people have more money, childcare rebates, rising wages. I mean, the Victorian government at the moment and the opposition are just handing out money left, right, and center for anything and everyone in order to get re-elected. Stimulus, 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 because everyone's going, what's in the budget for me? I'll vote for what's in my best interest. Well, your best interest is actually possibly the party that does the more fiscally conservative thing to do rather than just bribing you for your vote. So that's provocation. Now, it's very likely the government's going to make the problem worse. They'll keep the foot on the accelerator because that will keep them in government. The second thing that can happen is procrastination. The government policy doesn't change. It just stays the same. And the problem gets kicked down the road for tomorrow. The issue with that is that tomorrow's problem just becomes bigger to solve. More debt, we don't get out of debt, fewer taxpayers, those people who do pay tax have to pay more tax, more people on the pension, the cost of NDIS keeps going up, how are we going to pay for it? Like these big problems that need to be solved don't get solved, they just get kicked into tomorrow. And the third thing is what I call prescription, medical term. We take our medicine, we regroup, we reboot, and we renew. It's going to be a period of economic hardship. It won't be forever. It'll be for a period of time. We come together. We support one another. Some people will go broke. Some people will lose their homes, their businesses, their nest eggs. Some people won't be prepared. It'll just be a wild roller coaster ride because they're not prepared. They're not strapped in. And we sort out these structural problems with tax and all the rest of it, but we set ourselves up for the next period of economic boom, which will come if we sort these problems out. Which of these options do you want to take? Do you want to take prescription? Do you want to take the bad medicine? Bad medicine is all I need. Do you want the bad medicine? Do you want the provocation? Let's just keep going. Hey, bring out the beer. We're drunk, let's stay drunk. Or do we want procrastination? Let's not tackle these problems. Let's dump them on our kids and our grandkids and let them sort it out. What do we think? Well, the government will get to the point where they won't have a choice. The markets will choose for them. And that's why the government would always be better off empowered and decisive and saying to people, here's the path we're going on. Here's why we're doing it. We need you to get on board. My feeling is out of those three options, we're going to get procrastination, a little bit of provocation, and for some, we're going to get prescription. But because the prescription won't be across the board, we won't have this change, and all we'll get is a form of procrastination until we're forced to make wholesale changes. But in the meantime, the world economy is changing, and Australia is a participant in the world economy. We're a price taker, not a price maker. And so these storm clouds are gathering. The winter in Europe is going to be interesting to see how they get through it. The war in Ukraine, the midterm elections in the United States, these big events, what's going on in China. These are the world-shaping events of which we are a passenger in someone else's car. The rule is, right, we want to hope for the best but plan for the worst. Now, how do we do that? What we do is we identify what the worst case scenario is and we say, how would we survive if this happened? How would we survive if interest rates went to 10%? Remembering that people have borrowed so much more money today than they did back in the 1990s that you don't need interest rates to go to 10%, or 18%, sorry, to have the same impact as interest rates being 18%. We're probably already there now. More and more people are starting to get into financial strife. Number of distressed mortgages is going up. People are struggling to pay their bills. This will result in economic and social unrest, calls for change, etc. As interest rates go up, you don't need me to tell you that there'll be a housing squeeze. That housing squeeze will force more people out of their homes and into what? Anyone, think ahead with me. They're going to be out of their home and they're going to be into what? Anyone? Rental properties. Has anyone tried to get a rental property lately? How do you think that's going to help? It's just going to get worse. So there'll be a squeeze on people that own homes and there'll be a squeeze on rents. And we're not going to build enough houses because the cost of building has gone up and the finance for building has become harder. Interest rates will go up, push people out of owning a home into renting a home. The same time we've got migration firing back up, the same time that we haven't been building enough homes over the last little while. Even if we fix this problem today, you can't build a house overnight. It takes months. So we're going to be in this position where the housing market, which has been the wealth engine for Australia for decades, is going to all of a sudden get a temperature and a fever and look a bit sick. At the same time, the government is going to be under a lot of pressure to find ways to give people money, whether it's help paying energy bills, whether it's a rise in wages. We're now talking about industrial bargaining that hasn't happened for 50 years. We expect to see more industrial action, strikes, demarcation, all these things about you've got to pay us more because we've got to be able to pay the bills. And that will then be the third string in the inflation guitar, which is a wage price spike. As people pay more, they spend more. As they spend more, the cost of things goes up. And then rising wages, falling sales, cost of things going up, not being able to pass through that full cost increase will result in falling business profits. Falling business profits will then be the precursor to an increase in unemployment. Now, if you're thinking, have we ever seen something like this before? The answer is yes, and you don't need a bald head or a crystal ball to figure out when that was. Anyone who is my vintage, just turned 50, or maybe a little bit younger or older, definitely, will remember the last time this exact playbook unfolded. Can anyone tell me when this was? Not the GFC, not in Australia. It happened in 1989, 1990, 1991, 1992. So we know what's going to happen. It's not like we haven't been here before. It's just that we're forgotten. And of course, today's politicians weren't in government, mainly in the 1990s, right? John Howard is still around, but he's retired. And so we've got the next generation of young pups trying to figure this out. And so history keeps repeating, or there's a rhyme to it. And I think this is what we'll be facing moving forward. I hope I'm wrong. Remember, this is the worst case scenario. Now, not every bad thing that could happen will happen. It's very easy to become doomy and gloomy here. But in the same token, some things will happen to some degree. Not everything will happen, but in the same token, not nothing will happen. Something will happen. The question is what and to what degree? Only time will tell. But how will you fare when change comes? Are you prepared for change, or does any unfavorable change put severe pressure on your financial situation? I.e., as Warren Buffett says, you're swimming and the tide's going out, and will you be caught naked? One of the Steve-isms, I don't know if this is in the book or not, is it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And the skills and the strategies and the calculations that you'll work through as you work through this book, or you'll execute as you walk through this book, will be your preparation for making sure that you're going to be able to survive the months and years ahead, and that you'll build a strong financial position, and that you'll have reserves that you can call upon when you need them, rather than relying on other people, or worse, the government, to get you through. How do you prepare, Steve? Yes, you're convincing me now that we've got these real issues of inflation and interest rates, and we now know the government's probably not going to solve them because politically it's very hard to. The RBA's only got a pen, and that's not enough to get the job done. So how do we prepare? What do we do now to make sure that if these things happen, that we're not sucked out to sea? And the answer is prepare. The very notion of getting ready for change, so that when change comes, you're then prepared to make advantage of the opportunities that will come from that change. Because without wanting to sound like a parasite, the best opportunities to make money in an investing context always come when markets are dislocated. When markets aren't dislocated, it's very hard to find great opportunities. But when the market is dislocated, then that's your opportunity to make substantial sums of money. The last time I saw a significant market dislocation was the GFC in the United States, which was 2009. I thought it might have happened with COVID, but the giant stimulus that the government threw at it meant that we were inoculated. But now, do you see how they kick the can down the road? Instead of dealing with it then, we've now got to deal with it later. And it's an even bigger problem because of the amount of money that we've borrowed. How do we get ready? Are we enjoying this before I move on? Are we still awake? Are you still out there? Anyone? Good. I just want to make sure you're still there because I'm talking to myself, talking to a screen. One screen here, one screen there. Good. All right. We're all going good. Questions. The problem with questions is that I've got a Q&A period at the end. I can't take questions as I go along because my screen just melts down over there. So I'm not ignoring you as you're asking questions. Just save them till later. So how do we get going? How do we get ready? The first thing is you can only do what you know what to do. And if you want to know how to do more, then you need to be educated. If you want to know how to do more, or you want to know how to do what you do know better, then the answer is education. No, you don't have to go and do a TAFE course or a degree. A little book, anyone, maybe this one, or others like it, that open your eyes to new ways of seeing things and open your mind to new ways of thinking is a good start. Because you don't want more ideas of what you already know. You want new ideas that are going to challenge you and new ways of thinking that are going to be that bridge from where you are now and where you want to go to. The second thing is it is critical that you control spending. The inability to control spending is what's going to suck people down the financial plug hole. And in controlling spending, people have just become accustomed to living beyond their means. The convenience of not being able to afford it, but having it anyway, is going to be the lead weights that pretty much drag you down as the financial tide washes over you. Get out of debt. Get out of consumer debt. Do everything you can now before it hits the fan to get out of debt. And there's a fantastic extra resource which I'll be releasing later this week. The guys at Wiley just typesetting it at the moment in the moneymagnet.au website bonus section, which is called Debt Busters. All right. And this Debt Buster program is a little thing that you do to put in where your debt is, and it will show you what to repay first and how to get out of debt fast. Important. And then what you want to do is you want to increase your reserves. Your reserves are your safety margin against a crisis. If you don't have anything in the barn and there's a famine, how are you going to eat? And a lot of people not only lack money or lack grain in the barn at the moment, they don't even have a barn. They're borrowing out of someone else's barn, and they're going to have to repay that at the same time as a squeeze comes on. Right, we're pushing through. Here are six game-changing ideas. And if you're still with me, you're doing well. I've told you about the book. I've told you about the challenges that I see us facing. I've reminded you about the importance of not sticking your head in the ground and just waiting for it to happen and then waking up in a crisis. Instead, the key is to prepare. And you want to be prepared so that you're ready to act before you need to. You don't want to be trying to find the exit in an emergency because everyone will be rushing for the exit. Six game-changing ideas then. All right, let's go. First of all is this notion, and I talk about this in the book, about your financial IQ, the way you think about money, the way you act around money, and your financial EQ, which are your thoughts or your feelings and emotions around money. And your financial IQ and your financial EQ make up what I call your financial pedigree. Now, I wonder, are you a mongrel or are you a thoroughbred? Are you a bitzer or are you pedigree? Is your pedigree beyond question? Because a lot of people's financial pedigree, and I don't mean this as a put down, but just a fact, is that we are mongrels. I am a mongrel. I just got not perfect pedigree. No breeder. I'm just a street dog that my parents did the best job that they knew how to do, but their pedigree was mongrel too. And so what have I inherited? Well, without any further education, without going and doing an accounting degree, without becoming a chartered accountant, without spending years in audit, without buying hundreds of properties, and without the experience that I've got, all the things that I've read and tried, I have no doubt that I would be knee-deep in debt or neck-deep in debt and be working in a job I didn't like at the moment. The point behind pedigree is that you have these skills, your pedigree, and your pedigree will only get you so far. And if you want an outcome beyond what your pedigree can achieve, you need to import some better pedigree. You need an intervention. You need to find someone who has better pedigree and go and grab that pedigree and bring it over to you. Otherwise, you've got a glass ceiling on your head, and your glass ceiling is your pedigree. Not only that, you'll be passing that pedigree on to your kids too. They will only be able to achieve the maximum that you could achieve. And that glass ceiling is going to be very hard for them to break through unless they go and get pedigree from somewhere else. And this is why generations tend to stay middle class or stay below middle class or even stay upper class, is because the pedigree that people inherit. Now, in the book, I've created this interesting exercise that I would encourage you to do called the My Family Tree, My Financial Family Tree. And what I get you to do is chart your parents, grandparents, and if you know it, your great-grandparents, and then what they did and whether they were money attractive or money repellent. And as you do this exercise, what I think will happen is it will become clear and become evident about why you are the way you are and why you think the way you think about money. The second point I'd say is extrapolation, fancy audit word for meaning forecast out. Your current financial situation is the best indicator to reflect your present financial IQ and your financial EQ. And without changing your financial IQ and financial EQ by importing other information, whether it's from Money Magnet or elsewhere, then you've got what you've got and you don't get upset. Extrapolating it out means that tomorrow you'll have the same situation as today. You can't change and stay the same, right? If you keep doing what you're doing that got you into this financial position, then you'll stay in that financial position. Now, how will that play out? If you're financially sweet and everything's going well, then high five. Yes, you can always do better, but you're doing pretty well at the moment. But if you take a deep breath and think, oh, geez, I don't want to be tomorrow where I am today, then the only thing you can do is change. You can't keep doing the same things and expecting a different outcome. The My Life Timesheet, which is also in the book, will be a great exercise for you to complete. The third point I wanted to make is that the pension is a poor plan and a plan to be poor. The pension is a government handout. It is welfare. It is not an entitlement. Some people think the pension is a return on taxes paid over a lifetime. That's just not what the age pension was designed for. The age pension was designed as a survival payment, which is less than the poverty line, just so people can survive when they're no longer earning money. And if you're telling me that your plan is to go on a survival payment when you can no longer work, then I think you need a better plan. Any plan that then has the pension as a cornerstone to it, unless it's necessary for survival, is surely a poor plan and a plan to be poor. Now, this is how the book starts. It starts with a giant wake-up call. Did you know that 75% of retirees, people that have earned a fortune over their life, spent a fortune, raised the kids, gone on holidays, 75% of them end up needing the pension in retirement to survive? Something's broken with the way that most people manage their money. And so we need a new wine for new wineskins approach. We need to do something different to get something different. Because if you do what everyone else does, then you'll get what everyone else has. And if there's a 7 or 8 out of 10 chance that you're going to end up on the pension by following the pedigree that you've inherited without even knowing it, we better do something about that quick smart, hadn't we? 4, a better plan. The problem is when people don't know what to do, they do nothing. And when you do nothing, you procrastinate. You've got to find a formula or a framework that will be your ticket out of the financial struggles that you're in at the moment. You need new information if the information that you've got at the moment isn't already working for you. Now, can anyone think of someone or something that might be able to give you new technology to allow you to have new programming with the way you think and act around money? Anyone? Wow, look what I found. That's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book as much as a guide for people that wanted to change and go to the next level up financially, as much as any other reason. Cool. And then, what's the point of having a plan if you don't follow it? Or worse, you actively don't follow it. You know what you should do, and then you don't do it. Very early on in the book, I give you the My Financial Freedom Blueprint, which is just a number of boxes that you fill in, and then it starts to give you a measurable, definite, defined plan that you can start working to achieve your financial goal within the time frame that you want to set. The fifth point I want to raise, and I am mindful of time, but the fifth point I want to raise are the dangers of debt. People say there's two types of debt, good debt and bad debt. I say there are two types of debt, but it's bad debt and worse debt. Debt is actually reaching into tomorrow, borrowing money you haven't yet earned, and spending it today. That means that not only do you owe dollars, you also owe time. The more time you owe, the deeper into financial slavery you sell yourself, and the more tomorrows you have to work without having the money to benefit from it because you've already spent tomorrow's income. The consequences of debt are simply financial disempowerment. People consume the money today, they get a temporary retail therapy fix, but the debt lasts long after the glow of the retail therapy fades. And the more and more debt that we get ourselves into, and it's easier and easier to get into more and more debt, the more and more financially disempowered we become. And the more financially disempowered we become, the more financially desperate and the more financially despaired we become. And so the use and abuse of debt is the number one, in my opinion, reason why people repel wealth. And it starts at a very early age because when we become adults, we get jobs, we think, right, we're going to buy a car, we get into debt. We start using Afterpay, credit cards, personal loans because we want to make our way in the world, but we don't have the means to be able to make our way in the world, so we borrow it. And lenders are happy to lend you money because you've got your working life to repay it. The other thing about debt you want to be watch out for is this absolute mental trap of thinking it's okay to spend because you're being rewarded for spending with points. No one I've ever met has become rich from loyalty points. And what it is are organizations convincing you to spend dollars and get portions of cents back in return. In fact, I often think people that have big loyalty points programs, the size of your loyalty points program, what I'm trying to say, indicates just how hoodwinked you've been into thinking that it's okay to spend. And that if instead of spending, you had have been able to retain and invest that money, imagine how many more real dollars you would have rather than fictitious points you have to swap for trinkets that mean nothing. And then, as I mentioned before, if you find yourself in debt, you've got to get out of debt. And the Debt Busters program that I've created, I recommend to you to go and work through. And that's a free bonus item at the Money Magnet website. Remember, your current financial position, and in particular, the way that you use your money and the way that you've got into debt and how you get out of debt is one of the best reflections of your current financial intelligence, IQ, and your emotional intelligence, financial EQ. And this is a really important aha. So important, I'm going to have a drink. Are we ready? The way you use debt will be watched by your kids and will become their normal way of interacting with debt moving forward. So if you find yourself in a really shocking debt position, then you're setting up the next generation to use debt the same way because you've normalized it. And so if you want to normalize a different behavior, you've got to demonstrate that behavior. There's no good, we know this as parents, no good telling our kids what to do. We have to show them what to do by example. The last point of the 6 points is this: how you use your money will be how you're remembered. This idea of legacy. And then the question that follows on from that is, how will you be remembered? Will you be known as the person that was really tight with money, died rich, were generous? At the seminars that I run, or used to run, I would do an exercise with people where I'd say, you get one word, one adjective to describe your life. What do you want that adjective to be? Who wants it to be stingy? No hands go up. Who wants faithful? Some hands go up. Who wants loyal? Hands go up. Who wants generous? My hand goes up. That's my word. What's your word? And then once you've defined what you want your word to be, caring, giving, loving, whatever your word might be, then say, well, am I using my money in a way that's congruent with how I want to be remembered? Do I get an amen? I just get the feeling, right? I just get the feeling that the penny might have dropped, that some people want to be remembered one way, but the way they're using their money is actually something entirely different. Now, this is the story of Alfred Nobel. And because of time, I won't go into it today, except to say that he had a second chance to redefine what he wanted his money to mean and his legacy to be. And as you get towards the end of Money Magnet, you'll read the story of Alfred Nobel and you'll know about the Nobel Peace Prize, and you'll see how maybe you've got a second chance by reading Money Magnet. You've got an Alfred Nobel second chance to do something about it while you've got time to do something about it. And please take that opportunity if that's the case for you. The Money Magnet Movement. Let's change gears again. I'm on the lookout and I need your help. I can't do this on my own. It's too big a job for me. I need to enlist people who care and people who want to get involved. The possible responses from what I'm about to tell you are as follows. First of all, not interested. Okay. Maybe the wrong opportunity, maybe the wrong time. Doesn't matter. It's not for you. No hard feelings. Thanks for listening. The second option is, hey, I'm happy to do it, but I'm going to do it for me. Great. All improvement starts with self. And then as you improve yourself, maybe later down the track, you'll be ready to do it for other people as well. You'll be a good example, if nothing else. And then the third group are people who are happy to say, not only do I want to do it for me, I want to be in that second group, but I also want to do it for other people. I want the water to trickle downhill. I want to be a blessing, not only for my family, for my loved ones, but for my community as well. Now, no one's going to see except me, but which of those categories do you fall into right now without even knowing what I'm going to say next? Not interested. No, I'm happy to do it for me, or no, I'm invested for the general good of everyone. All right, cool. Thank you. Just looking over here, the majority of people are saying, do it for me and do it for others, which is great because that's the spirit that I want. So I'm looking for people who are willing to become what I'm calling money magnet ambassadors, of which I'm an ambassador. Now, to become a money magnet ambassador, it's not a cult. Don't worry. We're not going to shave our heads and dress in funny clothes and have secret chants or anything else like that. All you need to do is to believe in the cause. What is the cause? The cause is financial empowerment, to break those glass ceilings, to help people get out of this financial fog that they're in, into an element of financial empowerment, to be able to break this generational financial disempowerment they've found themselves in. You then have to believe in the message. And the message is simple. If you want to do something about it, you just need to find the right tools and strategies and then apply them. You need to be the change you want to see. Now, the message is the book. And as you work through the book, you'll quickly figure out what the message is. There's no ulterior funny message here. It's just a genuine message about, hey, you were born financially free. You might have sold yourself into slavery by the way you think and use money. Let's get you out of slavery and let's get you those full benefits of financial freedom that you were born into. That's your birthright. The third thing is you have to believe in the outcome. And that outcome is, once again, a financial change for the better. That instead of struggling with money, you'll be the master of money rather than money being the master of you. And if that sounds good, then all I'm inviting you to do is join me and become a money magnet ambassador. Someone who's willing to have a conversation about money with people who otherwise would think, oh, nope, we don't talk about money. And you say, oh, well, you don't have to be afraid of this because there is a message of hope here. Now, what do money magnet ambassadors have to do? Well, you can borrow the book from the library if that's your thing, or you can buy a copy of the book, $25, but you've got to buy it and then you got to read it, right? You can't just buy it and put it on the bookshelf, call yourself an ambassador. Now, how much does the book cost? Well, at the time of doing this webinar, the cheapest place you can buy the book is on Amazon for $22 or Big W for $22. Booktopia for $24.50 or Dimix, full recommended retail price, $32.95 as of the time of this recording, or you can pop into your local bookstore and see how much they're selling it for. I recommend using Amazon. Why do I recommend using Amazon at this point in time? Because they'll ship it to you for free. Now, you can get free shipping if it's your first order, or alternatively, you can get free shipping if you're an Amazon Prime member. Now, I understand you can try Amazon Prime for a period of time and then you can withdraw from it if you don't want to continue. And if that's the case, you can sign up to Amazon Prime, buy the book, get it shipped to you for free, and then cancel from your Amazon Prime before you start paying money. I don't think that's taking advantage. That's just being shrewd, being a good money manager. So $22 and delivered next day is possible with Prime. The other places you can go into Big W and buy it if you're near a shopping center, or Booktopia are going to charge you shipping. So it'll end up being about the same price as full retail. So the first step is to buy and read the book. The second step is to apply the book. To not just read it and put it down and go read it, but to start working through it and to start making these changes in your own life. Because ambassadors really need to be able to teach from what they've done. The third thing then is that only if you believe in the message, because you haven't read the book yet necessarily, but to recommend it to other people. The best way to get this book into hands is not to pay for advertising, but to get the conversation going. Hey, I read this book. You might benefit from reading it as well. It's called Money Magnet, about how to attract and keep a fortune of that counts. Would that be of interest to you? It's from this crazy guy, Steve McKnight. I actually kind of know him. Start having that conversation and then see where it leads. Start influencing other people. And then the fourth thing is get support, because I'll be supporting ambassadors going forward. Doesn't cost anything to be an ambassador. And then there'll be support through moneymagnet.au. And that's the website behind the book. No more.com.au, just moneymagnet.au. You can go there right now. In fact, please do. This very second, I want you to go to moneymagnet.au and join the Money Magnet movement. Just pop in your name, pop in your email address, click join, and let's get going. Let's get going and do this together, right? Which leads us into the final part of the second to final part of the book launch, which is a period of Q&A. Now, we're actually going to do this in reverse because I realize that some of you may need to go back to work or move on to other things. So we'll skip part five for a second and go to part six, and then we'll come back to part five and I'll answer any questions for those people that can hang around. So part six is let's launch. Let me, as we launch the book, give special thanks to people who made a profound difference in its creation and existence. Of course, I need to thank my wife, Jules, my girls, Cass and Alyssa, for their support. Dad can't write books if the family's not all united and behind it. So thank you to the fam. I need to thank the Wiley team. for their ongoing support and encouragement, and for everything they've done to make the book happen. Les Benbrook, Benny, thank you, Benny, for being the wind beneath my wings and for your diligence and your hard work. And honestly, your love for me and what I do is such a support and encouragement. I couldn't do it without you. Then we've got Sharon and Ollie, Shehan and Lise, Kat and AJ. These are my book reviewing team people that we workshop the book together. I'd write it, I'd work with them, we'd read it out, we'd try and make it better, and then we would refine the material to the finished product. And then lastly, my brother Ralphie. It's the first of my books that he and I have sort of worked on together. In his input and his encouragement, and he's also featured a small part in the book, which is great to see. So my sincere hope is that you'll partner with me, read it through on the screen with me, that you'll partner with me to bring awareness and to awaken the spirit of financial empowerment for yourself and for your loved ones and for your community. And let's pray that. Let's finish off with a prayer. Lord God, thank you for Money Magnet. Thank you that all these years ago you planted this seed on my heart, and thank you that in your time it has come to be. We pray your blessing over the book, but more so over the people that read the book. Would you open their mind, open their hearts, Lord? Would you awaken the financial spirit within them to be able to become a master of money rather than having money master them? Would you open conversations, Lord? Would you prepare minds and hearts for the conversations to come? Would you put a copy of this book in every person's hand who can make a financial change for the better? We ask for your blessing to be upon the book and upon everyone who reads it. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, if you need to jump off at that point, then by all means, thanks for being part of the launch. Let's say the book is launched. Hip, hip, hooray. I understand that we allocated an hour and our hour has come and gone. I'm going to hang around now and answer any questions that people have. But if you do need to jump off, then please go ahead now and join up at moneymagnet.au. Grab your copy of the book. Buy it online, buy it in store, just buy it and start reading it. And then let's keep the conversation going. Thank you to everyone who is going to join me as a ambassador for Money Magnet. We'll be working together in the months ahead to make sure that we're fully empowered to be the best ambassador that we can be. And I look forward to working with you. So if you need to go, bye for now. If you can hang around for a few more minutes, let me go back in my slides to the Q&A part. With the Q&A, the first thing I want to say is about the free gift from Wiley. So what we're going to do, or what I'm going to do, is for the next 6 months, we're going to do a monthly draw from everyone who's a member of moneymagnet.au. We'll put all the names on a file and randomly pick one out of the file. And they're going to receive 12 months worth of financial books, courtesy of me and Wiley, and they'll be mailed to you. So if you want to be in the chance to win a year's worth of financial books, which is 12 financial books, the idea one a month, worth about $350, just go ahead now and join up at moneymagnet.au. The first draw will be at the end of November, then we'll do one at the end of December. And we'll do those draws until the offer has ended. Right, Q&A time. And with Q&A time, I'll just leave the website up there with an encouragement for you to go ahead and sign up at moneymagnet.au. And I will now see if anyone has their hand up. So the way it works is I'll drop everyone's hand down. If you want to talk to me or have a chat about anything I've spoken about, then pop your hand up right now and I'll be able to go to you. So Charlie and Allison, at the moment, your hands are up. I just want to make sure that's the case. And if you do want to have a chat to me, when I say your name, you'll have to come off mute at your end. So let's go to Allison to begin with. Hello, Allison. Are you there? Remember, you're self-muted, so you'll have to click the mute button at your end to come off it. There you go. Hi, Alison.
Yeah.
G'day. Thanks for
Hi, Steve.
being on the book
Hi.
launch.
Oh, so great to see you. My simple question is, my teenagers, obviously being teenagers, are more tech savvy than I am, and I really want to set them up for obviously their future and their kids and so on.
Yep.
Is there an ebook for them?
There absolutely is, and you can buy it on Kindle. The only issue I've got with an ebook is because there are exercises in the book which need to be completed, and because it's valuable to complete those exercises at a point in time, so you've got your starting point from which you can improve upon, I still think it would be also good to have a print copy. But honestly, don't create reasons why people can't use it. If an ebook is where they're at, you'll be able to get the ebook.
Well, we can just do one of each, can't we?
You could do one of each,
And I can order my own.
and I'll make sure that all the templates that are in the book are able to be downloaded in the book bonus section in the near future. So if you see it on ebook and you think, oh, I'd love to print that out, I'll make it so you can print that template out. It just might take me a little bit of time to collate it all. That is.
That's right. Be in a Christmas stocking, so you got some time.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Alison.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Let's go to Tess. Hi, Tess. I can see your hand is up. Are you there? Remember to come off mute, Tess. It says self-muted at my end, so you'll need to click the little microphone button to come off self-mute. While we see if Tess can do it, let's go to Jim. I know, Jim, you'll be able to press the button.
Good day, Steve.
Nice to see you online
Can
today,
you hear me?
Jim. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for the discussion. Thanks for the explanation. So I've bought a book for each of my three daughters. They're in their mid to late 20s, and they're all excited about living a happy and wonderful life and have absolutely no comprehension or appreciation of what financial pitfalls are ahead for us in the world. Would it be possible? And so I only got the book a few days ago, so I've yet to forward the book on to them. But would it be possible for them to view the court recording of this discussion that you gave today?
What I want to do, Jim, and I only came up with this idea yesterday, is I want to put this book launch as a video on moneymagnet.au as something
Okay.
that people can access, because I think it's an important message. And yeah, I
Yeah.
only thought of doing that yesterday. I don't know why I only thought of doing it yesterday. So I'm recording this and I'll put the copy up on moneymagnet.au.
So if they join Money Magnet AU, then they can look at the recording.
Yes, that's right. I might even put it as a button that says book launch. I've got to figure out where to put it, but my intention is to put it up on moneymagnet.au.
Okay. Because what you've said in that introduction is very succinct and is very penetrating. And two of my daughters earn very, very good money, and I just would really like them to be able to master money and not be the slave of it, as you've said. So I'd really appreciate if you can put it up on Money Magnet.
Well, God bless you, Jim, because I know you've got a heart for your daughters and I know you want to see them succeed. And yeah, I really commend you for buying a copy of your book for them and for sort of encouraging them to say, come on, you've got to take this seriously. It's important. So well done.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Bye.
Bye. Let's go to Tess, doesn't look like you're able to join in. I know you're muted by me. Are you there now, Tess? I'll give you a second to see if you've figured it out. If not, pop in your question and I'll have a look for that. The chat says you've been muted by the organizer. Give it a go now.
Hello.
Hey, now you're good.
Hello. Can...
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Tess, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Steve. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm, I can.
Oh, hi. Thanks. I'm just wondering, Steve. Yeah, I'm just wondering, Steve, because I had such financial losses a while ago, and so all I've really got is super. And at 64, I'm just wondering through this recession whether I should be putting it in a low-risk investment option.
Unfortunately, Tess, what I can't give you is advice, because I don't have an Australian Financial Services license. So I can't tell you, the government won't let me tell you what to do. And there are rules and reasons for why. What I can say is that in our Money Magnet podcast, which I haven't talked about so far, but is available on the Money Magnet website for now until we get it up on the publishers of podcasts, if you were to write to us at podcast@moneymagnet.au, then we could provide some general educational information for people who are in your situation without talking about you specifically.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for that.
All right, you're welcome. And hey, Tess, thanks for jumping on. Thanks. And I saw someone else ask, are you ever at a point where it's too late to do something about your finances? And the answer to that is, well, possibly, because the longer you leave it, the harder it'll be. But regardless, don't you want to leave a positive message to your other family members and your grandkids and whoever comes next, which can be, hey, while this didn't work for me, it's all the more important that it worked for you. So I think
there's a
big wisdom piece about that. You were saying, Tess, sorry?
Down my route, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of lessons.
I said, hopefully, I don't think anyone will go down my route, but.
All right, there's a bit of.
They'll be much more conservative.
There's a bit of a delay between us, so I'll pause it there. But yeah, no, thank you for asking that question, and I hope the book helps you to rebuild your finances. I look forward to getting that email from you. Rightio, let's go to Jim. Are you there, Jim? Good afternoon. Are you there, Jim? Jim Kefopoulos, is that how you say it? Can't hear you, Jim. So maybe type your question in. Let's go to Juan. Hello, Juan. Are you there?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, gotcha. Well, how can I help you?
Cool. Thanks. Thanks for the presentation. Just want to ask you briefly, you mentioned about house pricing, you know, there is a bit of squeeze, so it's going to trigger the rental to be like, you know, more demanding, all those things. What is your general prediction after this sort of recession that we're going to face soon to the property market?
I believe that asset prices will go back up, and I think there'll be upwards pressure on asset prices because there's simply more people than there are houses. But there'll need to be some innovation that allows people to get into the market as well, because as things become more expensive, people will need deposits, they'll need to borrow money. And so there'll be a period of reset, and house prices might fall a little bit or a lot. And so people will jump back in. It'll be the revival of the market at that time. So like any season, there might be a winter that comes, but after winter will come spring, and it'll be a time of growth and renewal.
So even for the current technological changes and all those social changes, you still see this property market or investment market will repeat what it did past, basically.
Yeah, well, it will tend to, but there will always be opportunities to make money so long as people live in houses. But what the opportunity is will be dependent on the problem to be solved at that time. So it's hard to know what tomorrow's opportunity will be until tomorrow. And that's why I'm so wary of people that talk about buy in this area or use this strategy. Because it's not about the area or the strategy, it's about the problem and solving the problem that exists at that time. And we don't know what the problem is until we get there. But if you only know how to buy something and you don't know how to manage it and then sell it, you only know one small part of the investing equation. One more quick question, because I need to move on. There's other hands up.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for asking your question. No, Charlie, I didn't forget you. There's just a lot of hands up. I'll go to you now. Are you there, Charlie? Here's your time, mate.
Yeah.
I've got you now. How can I help you?
Are you there, sir? Hey, Steve. In your presentation, you mentioned that to get out of debt now. Are you talking about debt for an investment property as well? To get out of that debt, because I was just about to purchase one. I wanted your thoughts on that.
I just think you need a plan for getting out of debt. Now, whether ideally consumer debt, you would public enemy number one. When it comes to investment debt, you just have to ask yourself, how will I repay it if my means for repaying it no longer exist? For instance, right? Let's imagine that you were to buy a positively geared property or a positive cash flow property. Then if your tenant moved out, then you wouldn't have any rent. How are you going to make the repayment? If you were at the same time going to lose your job, then your investment and your debt is only as secure as your tenant and your job. And what I would encourage people to do is look at all the things that are the assumptions for your ability to repay debt and just make sure that A, they remain valid assumptions, and B, you've got a plan B if something else happens. For instance, do you have income protection insurance so that if you lost your job, you could make your repayments for a period of time? Yes, I know we've got low vacancy, but is there something about the property that would make it hard to get a replacement tenant at the same rent? So these are the strategies that I would be thinking about to mitigate the risk.
Thank you for that. Also, just very quickly, in the 1990s, recessions, it wasn't the house prices, they didn't fall everywhere. In some, states such as, Darwin and Hobart, they actually rose. In this recession, are you predicting any, states that you think will, there will still be, not a catastrophic fall that actually arise?
Charlie, do you know how the median house price is calculated? Are you familiar with the term median? So median does not mean average. Median means middle number. So in any market where there's a recession, there will be some houses that go up and there will be some houses that go down. Let's say there's 100 houses in the population. They will sort all the houses from highest price to lowest price and they'll take the middle value. So in any market, even in a booming market, there'll be some properties that fall in value. And so your opportunity in a market downturn will be to target those houses where people need to sell, but people don't need to buy. Now, that doesn't make you a vulture. It simply means that you're in the market at that point in time buying an asset that someone needs to sell. So there's always opportunities in every market, but you need to think differently. You can't think the same as everyone else and get a different result. Okay?
Okay, so and instead of looking for those growth locations, look for where people are looking to
sell. No, Charlie. When it comes to growth, you've got to think about why someone will pay more for the property than you will. But I just don't have time to unpack that today. I'm sorry. I need to move on.
Okay.
Thanks for your question, though.
Yeah, that's good.
We're going to go to Daniel. And then, are you there, Daniel?
Yeah, can you hear me, Steve?
Go ahead, mate.
Yeah, just wanted to say thanks. Read your books and mate put me onto them. And they've really helped me and my family and stuff, like with our finances and stuff. And I've bloody rented the rooms in one of them and that's absolutely killing it at the moment. And I've got another one that's heavily positively cash flowed and done them up and stuff. So thank you very much. Question would be, Steve, and fantastic presentation. I'll definitely sign up for Money Magnet and get the book this weekend. Two questions I have. On a podcast in like 2017, you said Rich Dad Poor Dad is a good book, but it has its flaws. So the first question would be, I just want to hear what your take is with the flaws. And the second question would be, how do you take the 18.5-year property cycle that Phil Anderson often talks about? Those are the two questions. And thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate your time.
I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't read Rich Dad Poor Dad and attended Robert Kiyosaki's seminar in 1999. I don't know where I'd be, but I wouldn't be where I am today. And so I need to heap praise upon the feet and shoulders of Robert Kiyosaki, and even perhaps more so Sharon Lecter, and also his so-called silent partner, Kim Kiyosaki. Now, what are the flaws in Robert's book? Well, in my opinion, it's great conceptually, but it's a bit light on for actual strategy. And I think that's where 0 to 130 kicked in, because it was the strategy piece behind the mindset piece that Robert talked about in his book. So yeah, I think it's a great book. I think everyone should read it. I think it has its limitations though, like any book has, and that it's up to other people to take his message and elevate it. As for the 18-year property cycle, I don't know is the short answer. But what I do know is that if enough people believe it, it has a habit of becoming true. It's just a question of whether or not it's mainstream enough to believe it. And will it be the cause, or will it simply be an explanation? Only time will tell. That's the thing about prophecies and forecasts. You can always test how accurate they were in hindsight. So let's reserve our judgment and see.
Thanks, Steve. Cheers.
No worries. You're welcome. Thanks for joining today, and thanks for your kind words. They really mean a lot. I love it when I hear that things that I've done have benefited people. Right. Tin, are you there? Let me come to you. Hang on. I'm clicking buttons. And there you go. Just yourself muted. So if you want to come off mute, then we can have a chat, unless you didn't.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, there you are. Hi.
Hey, can you hear me?
Cool. I can. Your last one today. How can I help you?
Steve, I'd like to say, first of all, thank you very much for the decades that you've been putting yourselves out there. You've changed a lot of our lives, maybe knowingly or unknowingly.
Thank you.
But, you know, we really appreciate your efforts, even though your presence are few and far between in the past few recent few years, because you're busy with your own projects and all that. But yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
My question was answered partially by the previous guest who has asked the first part, but then I'd also like to ask another question, but it's a stupid question, I guess. But I thought I'd ask it anyway, because it's something that I'd like to pick your brains on. I talked to someone, a friend of mine, who, because, you know, most of us here, our aim is to achieve financial freedom, you know, to whatever extent that means to each and every one of us. But when I told my friend that, he's like, if you're trying to get out of the system, then who'd be left? Who'd be left in the system to run the system? Who'd be collecting your rubbish bins? Who'd be making your lunches for you? Who'd be, et cetera, et cetera, if everyone was financially free? And that's something that I've been pondering, and maybe it's a stupid thing and irrelevant, but I thought I'd ask.
I don't think it's a stupid question. I think it's a good question. But I don't know the answer, because while not everyone can be the CEO of an organization with a huge salary, regardless of what their education is and what their job is and what their interests and likes are, my belief is that everyone can be more financially empowered. And yeah, some people won't read the book and some people won't listen to the message, and they'll continue to be financially disempowered and they won't have the same choices as other people. But I can't help people that don't want to be helped. You can't. I've got a message, and I hope the ambassadors sign on, and we want to get out there and we want to tell people the good news about how you can be financially empowered. And if people don't want to listen to it, or they prefer to keep living a certain way and that leads them to financial disempowerment and financial slavery, then we try, but that's just the way it is. So that's the best answer I've got for you. Not everyone will be open to the message, and so therefore the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few, and yeah, not everyone's going to be interested. But for those people who are, they're the people who you can work with. There's no point trying to convince people who don't believe in what you're doing that it's a right thing to do. That's a very hard, a very, very hard thing to do. You're better off helping people who are looking than convincing people they need to find.
Cool. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the encouragement.
Oh, that's all right.
It's always the expert barbecue that always sort of try to stray you away from your path. Thank you.
You're welcome. Rightio. Well, team, we've covered a lot of ground today for those people that sort of ask questions. And Rudy, I see your question about the interest rate mortgage. Perhaps you could send that to podcast@moneymagnet.au and we'll cover it in the podcasts. Mark says that he's ordered his book a few weeks back, but it's not arrived. Mark, you just need to go back to the person who you ordered the book through, whether it was Booktopia or someone else, and just follow up with them. I didn't send the books out, so it hasn't come from me. Right. Well, everyone, thanks again for joining me on the webinar. Thanks for your time. To those people who are watching the recording, I hope you got good value out of it. If you have a particular question that I didn't cover in the event, then again, once again, please drop an email, podcast@moneymagnet.au, and we'll do our best to answer it next time around. Final time, grab a copy of the book, read it, apply it, and then please, if you want to join me in trying to help other people become an ambassador, join the Money Magnet movement at the website. I'll say goodbye for now and look forward to seeing you next time. All the best and God bless.